Chillland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcioland Podcast. So I think you guys are going to guess what we are going to talk about today. We are going to go deep on everything that transpired in the Super League since Sunday. We're going to approach it in two different ways. At the top, Alex and I will talk a little bit about our experiences with what happened this week. And at the end of the podcast, I had a very long chat with my dear friend, the Napoli Outsider, trying to distinguish between fact and fiction on all the things that we read and saw on the Super League at the end of the podcast. That's in two parts. One's available free for all today on this show. The other half is already on Patreon for our patrons. And, you know, if you enjoy that interview, consider joining that program. But there are games this weekend, so Thousand Name is on deck to give us a little palate cleanser, if you will, in the middle, and kind of remind ourselves that there are games too. So speaking of that, I am joined by my dear friend, the producer, co-host of this show, Alex Goldberg. I have to say, right when this news broke, I thought of Alex for a variety of reasons, and I've been wanting to catch up with him on this. So Alex, I'm going to ask you very simply, do you look at football any differently because of the Super League and also because of your club? And you are Mr. Chelsea. You do an unbelievable job covering them on the Byline podcast and on Twitter and your videos. Do you look at them any differently? And you know, had the Super League come out and maybe Chelsea wasn't involved, would your reaction be different? So just open-ended, I'm curious to get your reaction on if you look at things any differently since last Sunday and what happened after.
Yeah, I'm actually glad you said that at the very end there. If Chelsea weren't involved at all from the start, like if they had no place in it from the start, yeah, I would have no negative feelings towards them. In fact, David, I'd have positive feelings. Like they would have come out of that totally a winner, in my opinion. And I know when you look at like a PSG and a Borussia Dortmund and a Bayern Munich, you can pat them on the back, but you also can come up with reasons why they may have not entered. And then maybe that takes the compliment away a little bit. Like if you think about PSG and who might be having the World Cup. Anyway, I don't want to get into the details, but like I wouldn't say the clubs that didn't enter that were massive we're just doing it totally to be noble. But anyway, yes, if Chelsea didn't enter at all, especially because all the other top, and I put that in quotes, top, all the other top English clubs did enter, I totally would have been like, wow, Chelsea, well done. And it would have lined up with what Roman Abramovich said way back when he pretty much bought Chelsea. He said, I didn't buy Chelsea to make money. I have other ways to make money. And I actually believe him on that. Now, he's not blameless, and I'll get to this in a second, but on that specifically, that's kind of true. Like, Roman doesn't really have Chelsea. I know it might sound crazy to some people, but he doesn't really have Chelsea to make money. He has figured out way more successful ways to make money. And to a certain extent, I do believe him when he said that he bought Chelsea to win titles, above all. So I do believe that. However, he is still the owner at the end of the day. And obviously, the people below him didn't pull one over on him and enter the Super League without him knowing. So, even though I think more heat needs to go on someone like Bruce Buck, Chelsea's chairman, also a bit of an American background, and I'll get to the American owners in a second, just in general, I think someone like him definitely deserves more blame. I would actually be in favor of Bruce Buck stepping down, leaving Chelsea Football Club. I think a lot of Chelsea fans would be. Bruce Buck, to me, doesn't really seem like he has a great connection with the fans. It seems like he's rather tone deaf as to what the temperature of the fan base is. So much so, David, I heard quite early in this whole process, like on Sunday, pretty much right after the Gary Neville rant, which really kicked off everything, I heard immediately that Chelsea were already surprised by the public backlash. And I was like, how tone deaf are they? Are you kidding? So I think a lot of that is on Bruce Buck. But Roman, it's his club, and they entered. So moving past, to answer your initial question, am I going to look at Chelsea differently because they were involved in the Super League? Yeah, definitely. And the sport in general? Yeah, definitely. I'll never forget this. How could we ever forget this? I mean, this was truly a movie. Like, for 72 hours, it felt like we were actually all in it, like physically in it, because we were probably on our phones more, and it was just such fluid updating that I couldn't even as a podcaster put out a real podcast on it, because by the time I would have been done, things would have changed. So I didn't do my first podcast on it until Wednesday, once obviously the Super League had totally fallen apart. But I really feel like if you were at all responsible in terms of letting your club go in, even if you were City and Chelsea and you were clearly the more reluctant clubs, it doesn't matter. To me, it was cowardly. It was cowardly and a bit pathetic on Chelsea and City's part that they weren't so gung-ho on it like other clubs, but they still entered because they didn't want to be left behind. Like, to me, that's a lack of nuts, David. I don't know how else to say it. Like, so you're not even going to be a leader, even though if you were a leader in terms of entering the Super League, I would have been probably more upset about that. So I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, but you weren't a leader in either way, meaning not entering or entering. You were kind of a follower because you didn't want to get left behind and it was still the wrong decision. So that pissed me off. That was kind of where my main anger towards Chelsea was. But obviously, I do feel better about Chelsea than I feel like I would feel about some other clubs if I was a fan of them. Like, I think Liverpool and I think United and I think Arsenal and Tottenham. And I'm not saying that because I'm a Chelsea fan, by the way, because I'm also not condemning City. So you can see probably the balance. And I don't like City. For anybody who knows me, I don't like City.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say that I'm less upset with them than those other English clubs. I am somewhat proud that Chelsea, clearly, the moment there was public backlash, tried to start thinking about how to get out of it. It's quite clear they were like, oh, God, we should get out of this. And it does give me some confidence that clearly there were people within the club from day one that were really on the fence and skeptical about it. But overall, David, I can't give Chelsea too big of a pat on the back because I just fear that other clubs aren't going to all of a sudden stop trying stuff like this because we know about owners. And I'd be shocked if this is the last time Chelsea sniffed around something like this if other clubs are doing it. So I really hope Chelsea and other clubs learned about needing to communicate better with their fans. How about with their managers? How about with their players? Not leaving those guys out to dry. And I think Chelsea have now had their fans lose trust in them. I think other clubs obviously have had their fans lose trust in them. So yeah, I do look at them differently. Like, I trust them less for sure. So them and a bunch of other clubs have a lot of work to do to kind of reinstall trust in us. However, at least I know that with Roman, he's a different type of owner from these American owners. He's not perfect, and I've been frustrated with Roman many times, but if we're talking about ownership, there was this great meme that was going on where it was like, I think it was a live video, actually. It was a true video. It wasn't a cartoon, where off in the distance, there's like a huge fire, and you can see a protest, and then there's one kid closer to the camera just calmly swinging on a swing, and the caption was, "This is me when I'm the only fan who doesn't want their owner gone." And yeah, we don't want Roman gone from this. It's not to that degree. And other clubs do want their ownership gone. But still, it's an L for Chelsea. If you have to pick one, let's just wrap it up like that. I'll wrap up my answer like that. It's obviously complicated. But if you had to pick one, if it's just a yes or a no, do you like Chelsea more or less after this? Do you trust them more or less after this? It's going to be the negative answer if I had to choose one. It's going to at least be 51%. Nah, they took an L here. So they may have salvaged it from a bigger L, but I do look at them differently. I do look at the Premier League differently. I do look at the sport differently, unfortunately, in a negative way. But for now, I look at fans, David, in a hell of a lot of a better way. So at least there's that. So yeah, that's my take on it. It's all a bit tainted now. What about you?
Great stuff. Yeah, so a lot to digest here. So first of all, I want to give a huge kudos to Tariq Panja's reporting on the New York Times. He broke the story Sunday morning, and I think the job he did was so good that by the time the news actually, when the clubs already announced it officially, like already the public reaction was so bad based on the accurate reporting that basically the cat was out of the bag, and the reaction was already so bad even before the official news came out that it was almost dead in the water then. So kudos to him. Look, you know, did I discover on Sunday night that football and money are incredibly connected? No. Was I kind of cynical with the, you know, involvement of finance and football and the transition of, you know, kind of the way I grew up with calcio and what we have now? No. I've seen this. I'm old. I remember when we went from the Champions Cup, when it was just the winner of the league went to the European competition. It was just you won Serie A, you won, you know, the equivalent of the Premier League, you went, that was it. And then they changed that. They had more clubs. It became the Champions League. I remember when the Premier League was formed, and there was, you know, a lot of similarities. Granted, there was still relegation there. And if you want to hang your hat and say, oh, it's pure because there was relegation and there isn't here, that's fine. But there are some parallels. So to me, the Super League was really just the evolution of that. We knew this was come, that clubs were going to try to do this. Like Andrea Agnelli and other clubs had been talking about this for years. A lot of times clubs have used this with leverage when they were looking to do a reform of the Champions League. And guess what? That's exactly what the timing of this coincided by that. And I realized COVID accelerated this plan. I have a feeling they were probably going to propose this more in a couple of years, maybe roll it out more gradually, try to get people acclimated with the idea. But the losses with COVID accelerated that. So I do look at it differently. Like you, Alex, you know, I live in the U.S. now. I've been here a long time. I really love American sports. I do look at them differently than European, maybe not as differently as many of other people with the whole relegation thing, which, yeah, I think is important. I totally get that. But, you know, I'm much more concerned with a disparity in revenues, in my opinion. Kind of, you know, a huge disparity in revenues is kind of a promotion relegation. Yeah, okay, you're in the same division, but it really limits who can win the title. I mean, you can just look at who won Serie A in the past 20 years. You can even look at who won the Champions League, and, you know, you can compare it to the Super Bowls. And I'm not saying one's better or the other, but it's just different. So I do look at it a little bit differently. I grew up in Italy, Padova, Vicenza, even in the third division, because of the culture of the clubs and your clubs representing where you live and where you grew up and the values of your city. That was huge in my formation of calcio. Like when I was growing up, Padova, Vicenza, even in the third division meant more than a Champions League final. So I get all that, but I do look at it really quite differently, because I think this week when we saw really all how it unraveled, the reactions and, you know, people trying to, you know, look at things as good versus bad guys when there's probably really no good guys here. And I even to a certain extent include a little bit the players when, you know, I see them talking about the fans and wanting to love, you know, having respect for the fans. Like, I look at it, you know, pretty cynically. Like, I think fans are kind of like a currency that's used. And, you know, when it's convenient, you talk about the love of the fans. And, you know, do I think the fan protest had a lot to do with the Super League collapsing? Yes, I do think that was a big factor. But a bigger factor was like sponsors. We saw Liverpool lose one, like TV partners saying, hey, you know, there's a problem here. This is not going to work out. And they caved. Now, did those sponsors and TV networks do that because they knew the fans were pissed? Probably. But I think, you know, we really saw, you know, maybe we look at these games and we don't look at it so much like these guys are competing to win a trophy. Maybe now we look at it more, you know, they're competing for the next contract and whatnot. So I look at it very cynically. I have to say, I watched some of the Serie A games. There was games this week. I watched a good amount of them. The only one that I could really get into was when Atalanta was playing Roma, key game for them to try to get in the Champions League. Because in my mind, I was like, here's Atalanta, a club that Juve and Milan, you know, they're competing with them for a Champions League spot. Like, I was watching that and I was like, geez, you know, I really want Atalanta to finish in front of both of them in the standings with a smaller payroll, and the Juve and Milan wanted to be part of the Super League. So I did look at it differently in that sense. You guys know I like this Atalanta team a ton, but now I was really looking at it as in terms of David and Goliath, and you know, David trying, you know, Goliath trying to keep David out of the Super League. But then also the flip side is, I think, you know, we talk a lot about the Leicesters and the Atalantas of the world, but in my mind, they really are an exception. They are the exception that proves the rule is true, because again, you look at the teams that win, the teams that finish in a Champions League spot, almost all the time, it's the one that have the highest payroll and the biggest revenues. So I think, you know, we can highlight the Leicester title. I can talk about Atalanta. But to me, at the end of the day, this disparity in revenues is a huge problem. And the Super League, you know, which was created, and they're talking a lot about COVID being a driver. Like, look, they were going to do it anyways. COVID just accelerated. Do I feel bad for clubs that they have a lot more debt because of COVID? Yes, but they were going to do this anyway. They had so much debt because of mismanagement, things they could have done better, that this was coming anyway. So yeah, I certainly do look at things differently. I also, you know, I have good, nice collections of jerseys that I've accumulated over the years. You know, I like to wear them and all. And this week, I've never had the desire to say, geez, I really want to put on this kit. Maybe that'll change. I think it will. Like, watching that Atalanta game a little bit changed my mind somewhat. So let's see. Again, I didn't discover on Sunday night the connection between football and money, but it was so brazenly evident now that I do look at it a little bit differently. Before we wrap up this discussion, Alex, I'm very curious. I just want to ask you this. What was your least favorite thing about the whole rise and fall of the Super League? You can really take it in any aspect at all, reactions, things that you read, attitude of clubs, like anything at all. I would imagine there's a long list of things that weren't great this week, but if you had to pick one, what would it be?
Oh yeah, I'll give a quick secondary shout to people using this as an opportunity to spread fake news. While so much news is being pumped out, there are accounts that knew they could tweet like fake quotes from Florentino Perez interviews and just fake things. And obviously they knew it would get traction, because anything at that moment, likes and retweets were on an all-time high. So yeah, that was really distasteful. But man, my least favorite thing. You know what? I can't even say the Florentino Perez interviews, because even though they were the most ridiculous thing of all time, I actually found them quite entertaining. So I can't say they were my least favorite part, even though some of the stuff he said was just absolute rubbish. So, you know what? I think the least favorite thing I experienced during all of this was, this is going to sound really bad, people's stupidity. Yep. Simply people's stupidity.
Yeah.
People buying lines like, this is to save football. When, David, you talk about finances, if you just want to dig into the financial states of a Real Madrid and a Barcelona, just look at it deeper. It was to save them. Florentino Perez wasn't trying to save football. He was trying to save himself. So, stupidity. Just people buying what they're sold. And people not really realizing that the owners don't care about you. They just don't care about you.
Yeah,
so, most people weren't for the Super League, and maybe their reasons were right or wrong or misinformed, but most people weren't for the Super League. And I'm all for the cynics who have good reasons, maybe against the popular thought, but there were some people who maybe just felt less attached to the game to begin with. They wanted to be cynical, and they were like, no, this is great. This is just such a good thing. It is going to save football. Florentino Perez is absolutely right. Like, it's going to make these clubs so much richer. It'll appeal more to the U.S. demographic. It's to save football. You're buying that? Have you looked at the books for Real Madrid lately? Have you looked at the Barcelona books? Do you still wonder why they're still in favor of it? Like, why Real Madrid and Barcelona are still in favor of the Super League? They still want it to continue? Is it any mystery? Just don't be so dumb. That's what I have to say. And I know that sounds really mean, but like, just think about it.
Yeah.
what owners say publicly, they're never 100% true. Like an owner, a billionaire, what he says publicly, first of all, a billionaire is not a normal person. Let me just say that right away. They're not a normal person. They don't think like you. They don't eat like you. They don't sleep like you. They don't live a day like you. They don't care about you. Whatever they say publicly is usually a load of you know what. Usually. It's never 100% genuine. Ever. Ever. Honestly. And I know that sounds like a blanket statement, but I really mean that. So why then believe that they're trying to save football? And we can have different definitions, David, on what it means to save football. That's not even the point. But when they say, oh, this is to save football, this is to save the game, the pandemic has hit everyone hard, so this is to save everybody from the pandemic. Oh, come on. Come on. I have an oceanfront property in Idaho I also would like to sell you. So, yeah, I think people's stupidity throughout all of this is my least favorite part. David, what about you?
Yeah, I love what you said about the fake news. One of my least favorite things, you know, was on the day that the news was announced that Woodward was leaving Man United at the end of the year. And then I don't know where it started. I think it was a troll account that posted Andrea Agnelli had resigned from Juve, and then a bunch of big accounts in England just ran with that. And it's like, just take a second to think about that. Like, really, for a second, like, Woodward's a hired gun that Man United hired. He was a sacrificial lamb over this thing. Like, would anyone stop and think, would Agnelli just abruptly leave like that? His family has owned the club for over 100 years. And look, he's looking as bad as anyone right now. I think only Florentino Perez is the one who's leaving this looking worse than Agnelli. But it's like, really think for a second. Also, you know, if you want to take it a step further, Juve is a publicly traded company. Like, the president there just doesn't abruptly resign out of the blue. So yeah, you were right. There was like a frenzy on Twitter. I actually think Twitter, for in some ways, was really good. When there's like new news like this breaking and all, if you follow the right people, it can really be like an enriching experience. But yeah, so jumping in on that was one of my least favorite things. Of course, the people that made a big deal about Agnelli resigning, they had a hard time saying, hey, you know, I was really wrong here. I should have thought about this for a second. This really doesn't make sense. And look, Agnelli could very well lose his job or be asked to resign from Juve, but he's not going to just leave abruptly like that. But I will say my least favorite thing is it much more became people look at things totally in black and white with this. It's not just on Twitter. And I think on Twitter, it's a big problem there. I think the level of discourse in some ways really lowered even more here. Like I said, I was thinking a lot about you as someone, you know, who is based in America, covers a club in Europe. Like, I think people get so sanctimonious that they just want to throw you in like a category. Like, look, I kept tweeting that I'm against the Super League, that I grew up on Padova Vicenza, but that I can understand why they're trying to do it, and that in a lot of ways it's probably inevitable in some format. So just because I think it's going to happen in some capacity, that doesn't mean that I'm in favor. And people just want to put you in a category and throw you there. And I, you know, when news like this breaks, I like to talk to a few people, really get to the bottom of what really might be going on. You know, try a few things, and look, you know, there's some things on Twitter, I stepped on it. I used some examples that weren't really good, not the right situation. But I think people just are really so tempted to just put you in a category with something like this and become really sanctimonious over it. And, you know, fan is short for fanatic. It's amazing how, you know, depending on what your club and what your league was doing, and, you know, fans of Premier League clubs, you know, are like fans of the league and wanting to show, oh, this league's really great. So I think a lot of times people really associate with that. We saw Juve, Milan, and Inter fans, you know, at first maybe not having a great reaction, but then saying, oh, maybe this is good for my club, so let me see if I can talk myself into it. So that part wasn't great either. So, yeah, I'm very curious to see how this situation is going to evolve. I think you also made a great point, Alex. It changes so fast. Like, I had done a patron episode where I just answered the questions of the patrons, and by the time we had put it up, it was basically obsolete. So yeah, I don't think this podcast will be obsolete, especially the part at the end with Napoli outsider, but it's nice to take a little break and now talk about games. And so Thousand Names sent me three picks for the weekend. There are games coming up. The first one he has is a Fiorentina Juve, and Rocco Commisso, I have to say, had a pretty interesting interview on all this. I recommend you guys check it out. You can find it on my Twitter page. So Fausen with Fiorentina Juve, not surprisingly, as Fiorentina winning 2-1, goals by Ribéry, Biraghi, and Morata. He says Commisso is going to celebrate and rub it in Agnelli's face by taking off his mask. He says the Super League has been ridiculized and that Ronaldo is going to be humiliated by Ribéry and the derby of players who should be retired, and that Iacchini deserves to be confirmed at Fiorentina. In Italian, Fiorentina Juve 2-1, Ribéry, Biraghi, Morata, Commisso esulta in faccia ad Agnelli togliendosi la mascherina, Superlega ridicolizzata, Ronaldo umiliato da Ribéry nel derby dei pensionati, Iacchini merita la conferma. Yeah, Juve needs points. They are in the race for Champions League spot. Fiorentina just above the race to avoid relegation. I'm going to go with a draw. I'll go 1-1. I'll give a goal to Vlahovic and Ronaldo, who looks like he really needs a goal. He's been pretty frustrated recently. Next up, Napoli traveling to Turin to face the Granata Torino. Oh, by the way, yesterday a Napoli-Lazio game was quite entertaining. Fausen has Napoli winning 2-0, braced by Osimhen. He says Gattuso wins again and is pointing for second place, not just the Champions League spot. He says Cairo, which is Torino's president, is focused just on Gazzetta dello Sport, which he owns, and that he's thinking about the next column to humiliate Andrea Agnelli in Gazzetta. In Italian, Torino-Napoli 0-2, Osimhen doppietta, Gattuso vince ancora e punta al secondo posto, Cairo con la testa alla Gazzetta, sta pensando all'ennesimo editoriale con cui umiliare Agnelli. Napoli are surging, they're playing well. Torino still in the race to avoid relegation, they have a little bit of breathing room. Napoli played yesterday. I'm going to go draw 1-1. I will give a goal to Osimhen as well and a goal to Belotti. Last up, Parma-Crotone. Fausen has a Crotone winning 2-0, goes by Messias and Molina. He says Cosmi is going to leave with his head way held up high in the match to avoid relegation, but that Parma deserve respect, and that Mann and Miala, which are really nice jewels on Parma, going to have a good game. In Italian, Parma-Crotone 0-2, Messias-Molina, Cosmi chiude a testa altissima la sfida tra retrocesse, ma il Parma merita rispetto, Mann e Miaia incantano. Yeah, look, both these teams are essentially relegated. I'm going to have Parma win. They've had a lot of bad luck. I'll go 1-0, and I'll give a goal to Graziano Pelé. Okay, so now we're going to close on Napoli outsider. He has a monthly spot on our Patreon page. Usually what we do with him is we have him talk about Napoli and we post it on this free podcast for all. And then we have a chat, him and I, on all of Serie A available to patrons. This week, it made much more sense for us to go deep on the Super League. If you know Napoli outsider, he is extremely informed, extremely eloquent, has a lot to say on the topics. He was a great guest. We're doing part one here for free for you guys. Part two is already on Patreon for our patrons. We are also going to post over the weekend at some point another podcast that we do on Patreon regularly with my friend Francesco. So that way you guys can get an idea on what we have to offer at Patreon. We don't make any money on this. We use it to cover costs, pay our contributors like Francesco and like Napoli Outsiders, the people that write articles, and to make a good monthly donation to the Insuperabili, which is a great charity in Italy. They run football camps for children with disabilities. So if you enjoy Napoli Outsider, consider becoming a patron. I think you will really like it. And we look forward to chatting with football about football next week. Okay, well, as you can imagine, we want to take a deep dive on the Super League, everything that happened this week. And, you know, I've been chatting with Napoli Outsider pretty much all week on the phone. I had my sister here, and then I was with my better half, and both of them were like, who are you texting all the time? There's just a lot to get to on the Super League. And anyone who's listened to Napoli Outsider knows that he's a great candidate to talk about this. So what we're going to do today, we're going to put about the first half of the interview available to all. And then we'll do the second part. It's going to be on Patreon. So if you like what you hear, I do encourage you to subscribe. It's a great way also to raise money for charity, and you'll get a lot of knowledge. So without further ado, always a pleasure to have you on, Napoli Outsider. Bentornato to the podcast.
Hi, glad to be here, and get ready because tonight we're going to have a profanity-laden podcast. You're going to wear out the beep button.
Awesome, great stuff. So yeah, so what we want to do today is kind of go, there's a lot of confusion, and try to bring some clarity. But Napoli Outsider, as we say in Italy, has a Sassolini and his scarpe. He's got also some little stones in his shoes that he want to address. So we'll get to all that. So I've been working a lot on the outline for this podcast because there are so many topics to get through, and I tried to organize them. But before we get to that, I have to ask you this. We are recording this right after Roma-Atalanta and Napoli-Lazio. And I want to ask you, did you look at these games any differently than you did prior to, say, the news that started last Sunday?
I have to be honest, not tonight. The one that was surreal for me was Napoli-Inter because it was Sunday night. And on Sunday afternoon, the rumors came out, and then there was supposed to be a press release like at 10:30 p.m. So it was surreal because it was between the rumors and the press release. And so I was watching the game, and I was saying, okay, but what does this – does this game matter at all? Because if these teams are going to the Super League, then Napoli is already in the Champions League. For Inter, it doesn't matter. And for me, the whole game was kind of, you know, I don't know. It was kind of in a bubble. I'm not even sure who played well and who didn't. It was like kind of a friendly match. It felt like a Birra Moretti match, right?
Yeah.
And tonight, for me, it was the same. But I understand why it might not be the same for a lot of fans. And the reason is that I've always had this, you know, this look at soccer or football as a business enterprise. So I'm not surprised by what happened. And so I snapped out of it. But people who were not expecting it, I assume that at least for the next 2 months, they will feel kind of uneasy. And that's, and we're going to get into a lot of these things, but I understand why, for example, the British owners have been asking sorry repeatedly because they have to get the good graces of their fans back, because otherwise fans are not going to look at this in the same way at all.
For sure. Okay. So we talked a little bit about Sunday. So let's start here. And I agree with you. You know, Sunday night, it's not like, as they say in Italy, ho scoperto l'acqua calda, I discovered hot water, that money and football are connected. Obviously, I've known this. Anyone who's listened to the podcast know that that's kind of a little bit my angle, too, with that, looking at the finances. To me, this really felt like an evolution of things that started in the 90s from Coppa Campioni to Champions League, and then the creation of the Premier League. So let me ask you, what was your reaction after those press releases came out, after that Inter-Napoli game? What was your initial reaction to the proposal?
Well, it was kind of a mixed bag. Now, the first reason is that I don't know if you recall it or if any of our listeners do, but I've always been big on competitive balance since we started this podcast, at least this monthly podcast with me. And I was actually in favor of a formula of a Super League, but not this. This was just a money and power grab. So when the first rumors about having a Super League came out, I was kind of, you know, maybe this could be not so bad. And when the details came out, well, basically, this was a solution that was much worse than the original problem, because let's face it, UEFA and FIFA are a problem. But this this not only was a solution, but it was much worse. It was like, you know, if somebody, like, he has a cut on his finger, you chop his whole arm off, right?
Yeah.
So is that, so that was it. This doesn't mean that the sport is in full health. But if that's the way you're going to fix it, you're just going to kill it off. So one thing that So my reaction was not at all surprised for two reasons. The first one is that Football Leaks published a document about 3 years ago, I think, where much of this was outlined. It was very similar to what transpired on Sunday. They just made a few minor adjustments. For example, Tottenham came in, Roma went out. Roma obviously had a different American owner at the time, so the plans changed a bit. But the outline was the same. And the second, you mentioned a really good thing, a really good point. This has been in the works, really, since the late 80s. The first time that someone ever spoke about the Super League was, I think, Silvio Berlusconi, when he was a Milan owner in 88 or 89. And basically, his argument was, okay, the Champions Cup is actually kind of cool, but we need to improve the revenues. We need to have a bigger show. You know, we cannot have the San Marino champions on the same level as the Spanish champions. And I can kind of understand that because, for example, the very first time that Napoli qualified for the Champions Cup after winning their first Scudetto, they got drawn against Real Madrid in the first round. And that was, that's because Napoli have been having good European draws ever since football started, basically. And so I could understand why you would want some seeding or why you wouldn't want, for example, a San Marino champion to start along with the Italian champion. And that's how the Champions League got started, basically in the early 90s, because the clubs started talking about a Super League and UEFA said, okay, we can give you a little bit of this. What do you want? And so the first thing that they said, okay, let's have a Champions League and let's have the second in the league qualify from the most important ones. And then every 3 or 4 years, you know, when they had to renew the formula, there was a renewed threat, a renewed blackmail of the Super League. And UEFA, instead of seeing the bluff, basically kept on conceding to the big clubs, giving a little bit more, because they could afford to give a little bit more under the threat. So if you can remember, we went from the basic Champions League, two teams, then they had the double round robin at some point. First they had the round robin because they had to guarantee a minimum amount of games, which meant guaranteeing a minimum amount of revenue from the stadium and from TV rights, so you wouldn't go out of the first round. Yeah. And then they had the double round robin. Then they had one bigger round robin. Then they had three teams from the major countries. Then when Italy risked losing a team, they actually had four teams straight to the round robin, no preliminary from the four major countries, and so on and so on. So they made consistent adjustments all the time, giving all the time a little bit more to the major teams. And in fact, we got to a point where, for example, an Italian team going out in the quarterfinals would get more money from UEFA than a Portuguese team going all the way, for example. And but that was because there was always this looming threat of a Super League. So they were always talking about it, but it always kind of felt a bit empty in the sense that, they were getting all they wanted. But then what happened? It happened, COVID happened. So the losses that they kept accumulating, because let's face it, this is not something they conceived this year. This is not something they conceived due to COVID. Mm-hmm. Anybody who says this is due to COVID losses is just gaslighting, okay? It's not true. It's something, but it did speed it up.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
Because obviously they didn't have much time anymore. And so what happened is they decided to do it. But it was a huge mistake because, first of all, they did it really poorly. We're going to get into the specifics why it could not succeed. And ultimately, UEFA won the battle easily because it was just, it didn't have a chance. It didn't have a chance. I mean, I've always been of the type who says, you know, money wins. And obviously, money was supposed to be with the big clubs. But they did it in such a poor way, such approximation by them, that they didn't stand a chance. And in fact, it lasted 48 hours. And if this doesn't speak about the incompetence of the organizers who spent years on this project only to see it fail in less than 48 hours, well, I don't know what will speak of that incompetence.
Fair, absolutely. So now let's go through the reasons for the creation of the Super League. And you already hit on the first one. And I 100% agree that COVID really accelerated something they wanted to do regardless. So let's start there. Do you think the Super League you know, let's say COVID hadn't happened and clubs we know have these big losses. And look, a lot of these are self-inflicted wounds. There's no doubt about it, but it's there. Do you think the Super League in and of itself, if it had a better format, would be a good solution for the financial problems of the sport?
Not at all in the way they organized it. I have always been a believer in a kind of Super League, but my kind of Super League would have been, let's say, a European Serie A. Let's call it that way. What is the difference? The difference is that you still have the big teams on top and they get more money and so on. But there has to be some meritocracy, which means you have to be able to be relegated from it and other teams have to be able to grow into it. What they did and what really made it fail, the real big reason that made it fail, and I don't think they grasped it fully, is that they had basically, they decided these 15 teams, they're going to be football. And everybody else is just going to be a sparring partner. It's just going to be teams that have to be glad they get to get beaten up every time they play against these 15 teams. So basically they decided this is our sport and it belongs only to 15 people, in fact, to 15 ownership groups. This was the main issue. So if you do have a Super League, which comprise, you know, but a team like Ajax or a team like Atalanta has to be able to get promoted. And you might say, yeah, but it's always the same teams that win. Well, first of all, it's not entirely true. And if you just think, 25 years ago, if you had to do a Super League 25 years ago, where would Chelsea be? Where would Manchester City be? Where would Paris Saint-Germain be? And the fact is, you might say, yeah, but those teams were sold off. So they basically became big because of their new owners. Well, but in that case, you're taking away even this kind of possibility for future teams. Think about it. They offered Leipzig to get in there. Leipzig didn't even exist 12 years ago. So you have to be to let teams grow into it if they are good enough to do it. It's not possible that, let's say, Atalanta plays in it. They arrive before Milan instead in the Super League, and then the following year, Atalanta is out of it and Milan is still there. You cannot play a risk-free league, and that's something that Guardiola pointed out. You know, the players that went on the pitch and had earned it on the shirt when warming up. That's what everybody was pointing at. Nobody is pointing out that UEFA has to be in charge. In fact, I think that if clubs took control, snapped control away from UEFA, that would have been fine, even though I've got something to say about this as well. But that was never the point. The whole point was the meritocracy. They canceled meritocracy, and everything else was just gaslighting, because the reason for this Super League is basically having 15 ownership groups get all the money in the sport and conditioning everything else. And having a God-given right, perpetual God-given right from now until eternity on the future of the sport, on trophies, on great players, on the dreams of people. You cannot do that. It's just not possible. Now, if you want to start the league with those 15 on top, I'm perfectly fine with it. I'm a Napoli supporter, as you obviously know. And if Napoli have to start in the second league or even in the third league, let's say the third league would be the first of the domestic leagues, I'm fine. But if Napoli get promoted, then they deserve to stay on top. Now, think about it. Milan, despite all their resources, hasn't been in the Champions League for the past 8 years. And that might become 9 years if they keep going as they are. Okay? So why on earth shouldn't there be any kind of meritocracy in the Super League? That's what really killed it off. And that's the main argument of the people who didn't want it. And it's unarguable. You cannot have risk-free enterprise. And that's what they wanted. They wanted, because, you know, when you have something like that, not only you go and suck up the money from the domestic leagues, because that's what would have happened. Not only they would have commercialized better the rights for the Champions League, okay?
Yeah.
So it's not just about that money. It's not just about getting the money that UEFA wasn't giving them. It's also about sucking up the domestic league's money. So every other team, now think about this. The five big leagues have right now 198 teams, okay? Just the Serie A, Bundesliga, Liga, La Liga, and Premier League. The Super League only had 15. So basically, 15 fixed teams, obviously, plus five. So you have 183 teams becoming a lot poorer than they are right now. just for the good of those 15. And obviously, the main argument is not so much about the money that they would generate, which is, of course, extremely important, but it's about what in America they would call franchise value.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, let's say you want to buy, a National Football League, an NFL team, or a Major League team, or an NBA team, okay? You can't just say, okay, hey, I'll buy this Major League team in Charlotte. Hey, there's no Major League team in Charlotte, okay? If you want the Major League team, you got to buy one of the 30 that they have. If you want an NFL team, you got to buy one of the pre-existing ones. What does this mean? It means that you have to pay the price that they have. There's a finite number of clubs or franchises. Mm-hmm. In soccer, there's an infinite number of clubs. You can actually build your own club from scratch like Leipzig did.
Yeah.
So what happens is that if you have those 15 teams, their value skyrockets. It's not just about, again, if a club is worth $1 billion right now and it enters into Super League as one of the 15, then automatically it goes like up to 3 or 4 or 5 million. Because if anybody wants to be part of the Super League, he has to buy one of those 15. That's the only way you have a guaranteed participation. So that's where the real money was going to be. And it's shameful because basically destroys not only the revenues of all the other clubs, not only the dreams of all the fans of the other clubs, but also the value of the franchises. It was a huge money and power grab, and it was going to destroy the sport. And again, if you're going to have a risk-free enterprise, that's just not fair. And you might say in the U.S. it's like that. Yes, but in the U.S. it was started like that. So you're not taking rights away from others, like in this case. You're just building from scratch in that case, okay, in the U.S. That's what happens. In Europe, you have different traditions. In the U.S., what matters is that everybody who participates has a chance to win. In Europe, it matters that everybody can participate. These are two different traditions, two different spirits of the sport. And they were trying to destroy that, and they were trying to take it away from hundreds of millions of fans around the globe of all the teams that were not going to be in the Super League. You do not get to do that. It's absolutely not good, and I'm glad it was stopped. And again, they offered a lot of excuses, and now you're going to start listing them, and I'm going to start calling them out and telling you why it's total bullshit. Allow me to say bullshit, because
yeah,
I should say much worse words. But that's the whole point. It was just about the money. It was grabbing the money. It was never going to be for saving football. And there were so many contradictions in Florentino Perez, who seemed really like a drunkard when he was speaking, and he was contradicting himself repeatedly with the journalists not calling out the lies he was saying, because a lot of stuff was just easily provable. Like, for example, he said that UEFA is not transparent because he knows the salary of LeBron James and he doesn't know the salary of Cheferin. That is just, that can be disproven in like 10 seconds. The balance books of UEFA are public. And in fact, the following day, Calcio and Finanza, you know, obviously the Italian sports website, they published Cheferin's salary because obviously it's public. So he just lied. He obviously lied. And that's what shows how poor the reasons were. They couldn't even build a true reason. They were just making things up as they went. And for example, the other thing was that Florentino Perez said, oh, this is going to save the whole of football, because if you give a lot of money to us, then a lot of money is going to go on to other teams. I know you have a question about that, so I'm not going to spoil the whole thing. But the point is, he also, beyond that, he contradicted himself and said, well, it's not possible that in the Premier League, the top six teams are losing money and the other 14 are making money. And then in the Liga, the top three teams are losing money and the other 17 are making money. Now, first of all, that's a lie and it can be checked easily. But second of all, if the small teams are making money, then they don't need the Super League to make money, right? It means that soccer is not failing. You guys are failing. You guys are defaulting. You guys need the money, not the whole soccer system, if what you're saying is true. Obviously, what he was saying was not true. But the point is, he was just making stuff up along the way. He was just lying. And, well, the journalists were just happy to be there, so nobody called him out for it. But anyway, let's go through the reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's listen.
Let's start with this one, and you hinted it, because this is interesting, and I agree. And by the way, out of all these reasons, there's only one that I'm not saying I agree that this is the solution to, but that I see as, I don't know if even problem is the right thing, but let's start with the trickle down effect. Now, okay. I hate, and let me start here. Like, I hate it in politics. It's been proven to be utter bullshit that if you cut taxes to the super wealthy, it's going to trickle down to people, to the people below them. Proven time again, that's totally not true. Do you think the same is true with this proposal? Because they are saying, look, you know, we maintain there's 4 billion people that watch the sport. 2 billion of them are fans of our teams. Like, you need us to then keep the whole thing moving. Do you buy that as a reason why the Super League ultimately doesn't just benefit the clubs that are in it? Do you buy that? That one, I have to say, I completely don't buy at all. And I kind of have a feeling you agree.
Obviously. I mean, look, I know a lot of our fans, our listeners, are from the U.S., and I know that a lot of them will be Republicans, and they do believe in trickle-down economics. So I am not going to say exactly what I think about that. But it has never worked in practice. If you want to give money to the poor, you give it to the poor. You don't give it to the rich, hoping that some breadcrumbs fall off the table. Okay? So that's the first thing. And the second one is the actual reason. When they asked him, okay, but how is that going to help? And Florentino Perez pointed out two ways in which the trickle-down system would have worked. And they are both absolutely false or wrong. Now, the first one is we're going to give more revenue sharing as opposed to UEFA dollars, okay? And that, in theory, it was true. They said, hey, we're going to give like $400 million, whereas UEFA gives about $300. Yes, but how much are you taking away? Just to give you an idea, let's say you are a club right now and you make $10 million through the domestic leagues and all your rights, and then UEFA gives you $2 million in revenue sharing. In total, you're getting 12, okay? And let's say in the Super League scenario, you're getting $4 million in revenue sharing, but the domestic league value has crumbled all the way down to $5 or $6 million for you. So all of a sudden you're getting 6 plus 4. Yes, you're getting more revenue sharing from the Super League, but because they're biting into your revenues, because that's what would have happened. Javier Tebas from La Liga pointed out that this is a zero-sum game. It's not like money can be created out of thin air.
Yeah.
If you're going to get more billions in TV rights and sponsorships and everything, they're going to get it by sucking it up from the domestic leagues. And that's already something that was about to happen. There was an Australian TV station that had a TV rights offer for the Champions League, and they suspended it when they heard of the Super League, because obviously it's not like they can keep paying for the Italian League and the Champions League and the Super League. So they stopped and they said, hey, let's see what happens first, okay? Because if we can pay only for the Super League, then that's worth a lot more than the domestic league. And that's their point. Right now they had 5 domestic leagues and the Champions League. For them, creating the Super League was supposed to get the revenues from the Champions League and from most of the 5 top leagues. So they were going to give more revenue sharing, but they were going to impoverish the teams in those leagues first. So the total revenues of the smaller teams were going to be much less. And so that's the first thing. So that was the first part of the bullshit, okay? And if I give you a bonus, but I reduce your salary by a lot, you're going to be much poorer. You're not going to say, hey, I'm getting a bigger bonus right now. What about getting a bigger salary, period? And then the second way, they said, yeah, they can sell players off to us and get bigger plus valences because we're going to be richer.
Yeah.
That is absolutely false. Now, let's say a billionaire goes to your local market and wants to buy a banana. Does he pay that banana $100,000, or does he pay it just the market value? Why would he pay it more just because he's got more money? I don't think that Bill Gates buys bananas at $100,000 just because he can afford to. He still buys at market value. So, and in fact, the market would get depressed because those teams would rely a lot more on Plus Valences, having a lot less sponsorships and a lot less TV rights. And you only have 15 powerful teams. Like right now, let's say that Napoli wants to sell a young player. Let's say it wants to sell Elmas.
Yeah.
If it wants to sell Elmas, it has about, again, over 100 teams in the top 5 leagues that might be interested. And a lot of them might have money. In the Super League scenario, it has to hope that one of the 15 teams wants it, because the others are probably not going to be rich enough to buy him. And even if one of those Super League teams wants him, unless there's two or more who start basically an auction, then why does that one Super League team have to blow its own offer out of the water? It will just offer what it needs to buy the player. If a player is worth $15 million, why should they offer 30, 35, 50? There's absolutely no reason for them to. And that's something that just happens. You pay market value. You pay what you need to buy a player. You don't pay more just for the sake of it. Nobody's ever done that. Nobody. So that was just something stupid. Also, the players probably, due to rising salaries, would have all wanted some release clauses with the smaller clubs. So the Super League teams would just go around triggering release clauses and not even having to negotiate. So they would pay, in some cases, even less than market value. So this was going to be all BS. And the worst part of it, though, was that they would have just taken away all the dreams from those teams. Because by rule, basically, this was going to say, hey, by rule, you cannot win the biggest European competition of them all. Because the Super League, that's what it was going to be. It was obvious that the domestic leagues were not going to be as important. The Champions League certainly was not going to be as important. So they were saying, hey, right now, at least in theory, you can win it. Borussia Dortmund climbed to the final. Porto won the Champions League 17 years ago. It was a lot of time, I reckon, but they did. Villarreal made it to the final. Valencia made it to the final. Minor teams did make it to the final or semifinal. Well, you're not going to have that luxury again. You cannot win it. And for them, that's okay, because they believe they have a God-given right to win it. And it was shocking to me that Florentino Perez, when he was asked, okay, yeah, but what do you need it? Because otherwise, Real Madrid cannot buy Mbappe or Haaland. And I'm looking from the outside, and I'm like, who cares? You know? But for him, yeah, that's an emergency. It's like the game has to have Mbappe playing for Real Madrid. That's the problem we need to fix. No, that's not the problem we need to fix. And they have to be better. They have to manage their money better. This is just embarrassing. And again, this has been in the works for years, much before COVID, because they were losing a lot of money. And as Rummenigge said, Rummenigge now, he works for Bayern Munich. I think they have like 25 consecutive balances in the plus column.
Yeah.
Even during COVID. And as he said, when you have bloating costs that are booming past your revenues, what you do is you cut the costs. You don't just go killing around teams just to suck their money up, because you don't have rights to their money, okay? You're not bigger than the game. That's what they thought they were. They have to cut costs. And guess what? If they don't and they fail, then so be it. I don't care about that, to be honest. And it pisses me off. It really does. think about this. Because
no, I do. I agree with you.
One thing that really makes my head just blow up is that these guys who are running this circus and the main clubs have shown themselves to be incredibly incompetent. Now, you think about what just staying with Italy, you know, they say, yeah, well, Juventus has won the last 9 leagues, so they're good. Well, this shows their management is shit, okay? They're really bad. No, they are really bad. You think about, well, you only need to look what they did going from Allegri to Pirlo to Sarri to Pirlo to just understand that. Or buying Ronaldo only to do worse every year since he's been there, or stuff like that. You can tell. But the power of money is such that they keep edging out teams that work a lot better. And I'm not just mentioning Napoli, but also Lazio has worked better. They've kept their balance intact. All doing well, and they've won some Italian Cups. Atalanta has probably worked better than anybody else.
Oh, for
sure. But because these teams respect the rules and respect their balance, they don't get to win. So Juventus and Inter and Milan, they break the rules. They break their own balance. And then guess what? We have to just bow down and let them have it. I mean, we have to fix your balance by just giving up our hopes forever? Are you kidding me? And that's the thing. They broke the system. Make no mistake, the big teams broke the system in the last 30 years. Because since the beginning of the 90s, the Premier League started, the Champions League started, TV rights became something which did not exist before. Pay TVs came, and satellite TV came, and so on, and it became a mine, a gold mine for them. And the money windfall created a gap that could not be closed anymore. You look at what happened in the 80s, in the Scudettos in the 80s in Italy. Roma won, Verona won, Napoli won twice, Juventus, Inter, and Milan won once. There was not a, and Sampdoria won in 1991. There was no repeat winner for 7 years in a row, and only Napoli won twice in that span, and all the while having the best player in the world, okay? And then the Champions League was created, and the pay TV came in, and decided to give an incredible amount of money to the top teams. That created a system in which in the past 30 years, all the Scudettos went to Milan, Inter, and Juventus, with two exceptions, one to Roma and one to Lazio, and both teams suffered financially for the next 20 years because of that. And Parma, Fiorentina, Torino, and Napoli, who kept trying to spend to keep up and bridge the gap, the TV money gap, they all defaulted. In fact, Parma did it twice, so that's another thing.
Yeah.
And that's because these big teams created these flaws. And now they're saying, hey, yeah, but the leagues are not competitive. There's no competitiveness. So, well, you brought these flaws. So first you destroy the house, asking for more and more. And then you say, hey, this house is destroyed. You've got to abandon it. You did it. Clean it up. And guess what? This is something I would do right now. I would fix competitive balance right now. They're at their weakest point. They used this Super League. It didn't work. So now, you see, for 30 years, they had this threat. They had this blackmailing scheme and strategy, and the UEFA never wanted to see if it was going to work because they would have lost too much. But now, UEFA and Serie A, if they want, they can say, hey, we're going to give TV rights, equal TV rights to everybody. So competitiveness is fixed. I mean, Juventus is still going to have a lot more money than Spezia because they're going to have stadium revenues and they're going to have commercial revenues, which are still going to be huge. But at least the TV money is going to be the same for everybody. So that's going to close the gap a bit. And what are they going to say? They're not going to say anything. They can't say, hey, we're going to form a Super League. We've already been through that. You're not going to form a Super League, okay? You failed. So we've seen the cards you're holding, and you got nothing in your hand. So let's fix it. Let's fix the competitiveness problem. Let's fix competitive balance. Let's fix the leagues. And let's get back to how competitive the leagues were in the 80s or even in the early 90s. But I don't think that's going to happen, at least in Italy. I mean, whereas in the rest of Europe, they're talking about punishing these teams. In Italy, well, the president of the federation has already said, oh, nothing happened. Oh, we're not going to punish them. Oh, I love Agnelli. He's so sexy. I think he said that, yeah. I don't know, but he. I think he wants to make out with Gazidis. I mean, who doesn't? But you see, the point is, right now, I think we have to jump at the occasion, and we got to fix a flawed system. They were going to make it much worse, and this is infuriating because they created the problem, and now they're complaining about the problem they created. And that problem is freaking huge right now. I've already been big, again, on competitive balance, because it pisses me off that, for example, when Roma and Napoli are bridging the gap to Juventus, they can just go out and buy Higuain and buy Pjanic through release clauses and become stronger. Or, for example, when Juventus just barely edge out Napoli in the league, what the league does is they give them the money to sign Ronaldo. They got 60 million more than Napoli just for finishing 4 points ahead. So basically, the European system, and this is why there's no comparison to the American system, the European system basically says, oh, you're the stronger one, you're the richer one. Well, let's widen the gap. In the U.S., the opposite happens. You are last in the NBA. Well, you're going to get the first draft pick. Of course, there's a draft lottery, but there would be.
Absolutely.
Right. They have basically competitive balance systems. It doesn't need to be a salary cap. It can be more revenue sharing. For example, I think Major League Baseball does not have a salary cap, but they have strong revenue sharing. And they don't care if the New York Knicks, the Dallas Cowboys, the New York Yankees, you know, the biggest sports franchises in the U.S., they don't care if they don't win. Because as a whole, that's good for business. Because guess what? You know what brings, what draws people? Competitiveness. The reason for which people don't watch Juventus Spezia, which is true, by the way, they don't watch it because they know how it's going to end. And the reason they know how it's going to end is because the system is flawed. It's tilted. It's trying to privilege the big clubs. And it's not about Juventus, obviously. It's a gradual thing. So, for example, Napoli have advantages over Spezia. So I'm not pulling my club out of it, just so you think that I'm banning Juventus. But the point still remains. And in the Super League, they were doing the same fucking thing. Sorry, pardon my French. But they were doing the same thing, because the first thing they said was, okay, the first year everybody gets $350 million just to step in there. And I was like, okay, that's nice. And then Il Fatto Quotidiano, Italian newspaper, came out with some more details. And they said from the second year, Real Madrid and Barcelona were going to get $410 million. And then it was going to be all the way down to the teams from the 13th to the 15th position of the founders, who were only going to get $100. So basically, you're institutionalizing forever the fact that just by virtue of existing, Real Madrid and Barcelona should get about 300 million more than other founders, not of the invited teams, but the founders. How can there be any competition? It's obvious that in the long run, Real Madrid and Barcelona are going to win an outsized number of trophies.
For
and
sure.
It's obvious that the teams from positions 13, 14, and 15 are not. So they're just there to get beaten around. And that's why, I guess, for example, Bayern Munich didn't want to really join. And that's also the reason for which they wanted to stay in the domestic leagues, which I thought was absolutely immoral. Now, if you want to have a breakaway league, then do it. But just get the hell out of there, okay?
Yeah,
we don't want to
stay
in the domestic league. Because in the domestic leagues, we have dignity. You got to, even if we're going to lose a lot of money, there's going to be dignity. But the reason they wanted to stay in there, think about this. Why does Juventus want to play in the Serie A still? If the reason they're having this breakaway league is that Juventus gets sick of playing Crotone and Spezia, then why do they insist on playing in Serie A? The reason is very simple. Because in the Super League, they might not win a title for 25 years. There are teams that are going to be a lot richer. And guess what? I think they haven't won a title in 25 years in the Champions League. In the Super League, it wasn't going to be any different. But their fans were not going to spend it. How can their fans, who are used to winning one, two, sometimes even three domestic trophies every year, including the Super Cup, how were they going to accept not winning any trophy for 25 years? That was going to damage their brand. So that's why they have to stay in the domestic league, so that they can kick around those other teams who are going to be much poorer as opposed to them. And in the meantime, they can keep raising trophies. They can keep saying how beautiful they are. They have the media on their side, because think about it. I mean, the media are just freaking ridiculous. They keep telling us how great these teams are, how fantastic, how fabulous. And this is what they have built. They have built this hagiography of these teams. And in the end, that's what happens. Then we have to believe that Juventus win because they're more beautiful, not because they have five times the resources of Atalanta. And guess what? I think they're level on points with Atalanta right now, right? Something like that. Even if they're ahead, they might be ahead by one. But look, you're using five. I mean, Ronaldo alone makes almost as much as the whole Atalanta squad. So basically, you're showing your own incompetence. And even the money you have as a revenue is not enough, because you're having so much debt. Just to edge out Atalanta by one point? Are you kidding me? No, you've got to be punished. If you are the worst team in the league, it doesn't matter if you're the biggest. If you're the worst, you end up last. If you're the best, you end up first.
Okay.
They were trying to tilt the scale, and I was not going to – I don't think it's acceptable at all.
Okay, great, great point. I totally agree on the trickle-down thing. So let's move to the next point. You actually created a great transition. You know, in movies, you're allowed one F-bomb, and you can still be PG-13. Two F-bombs, you're rated R, which is perfect transition for our next point. One of the big selling points of the Super League is that it's really important to play more of the big games, like that Bayern PSG games. Those were awesome. There's a lot of attention on those games. And in a lot of ways, it is pretty similar to Hollywood. Think about it this way. Like, there used to be a much bigger range of movies, and then they're like, oh, you know, the ones that actually do make a lot of money are Avengers, IP, sequel, things like that. Do you buy that argument at all?
To some extent, but...
Right? There is a little something to that one.
Right, but it's the wrong way to look at it. I mean, it is true, but it's the wrong way to look at it. Why? Because it depends not only on the teams that are playing, but also on the stakes. Okay. So, for example, this year we've had Real Madrid-Inter, but it was in the group phase, and those games didn't really mean all that much. I mean, they were okay, but they weren't like a huge event. It wasn't like watching Bayern-PSG with one of the two teams going out. The stakes are what makes a difference. I mean, I'm very familiar, obviously, with the United States, and the most exciting words in sports in the United States are
Game 7.
Game 7. It doesn't really matter if you've got the Carolina Panthers or the Tampa Bay Rays. If it's a Game 7, it's a Game 7. You better get in front of the TV or go to the stadium and watch it, because there's nothing more exciting than that. It's Game 7. It's not so much who participates. It's the stakes. But do you think if Napoli played Bayern Munich in the Champions League final, people wouldn't watch? I mean, obviously they would watch. It's the Champions League final. Croatia was in the World Cup final. Obviously, if it's Brazil versus Argentina or if it's Italy versus Germany, there are some added things to it. But guess what? Everybody's going to watch the World Cup final regardless of who's there. So the problem here is the way they've built the competition, okay? As I said, they've pushed so much for UEFA to add group games because they had to give guaranteed games to the teams. But if you give guaranteed games to the teams, eventually those games are going to become more and more meaningless. That's why leagues in the beginning went from 16 to 18 to 20 teams, because they went from 30 to 34 to 38 match days. And now they're saying, hey, yeah, but guess what? Too many of those games have no meaning. Like, for example, Verona in Italy has been playing friendly matches for the past 2 months, and they will play friendly matches for the next 2 months because they can't do anything. They cannot go into the Europa League. They cannot get relegated. There's no point for them in playing. They are the most boring team right now, not so much because of the way they play, but because there are no stakes. I mean, if you've got to watch Verona-Sampdoria, I would never watch that, not because of the value of Verona and not because of the value of Sampdoria, but because of the meaning of the game. It's little more than a friendly game. And obviously, if it's Real Madrid-Inter, yeah, you might be a little more enticed, but it's not so much. Because, I mean, if you watch Lakers and the Heat go at it in the NBA Finals, it's one thing. If you watch them play in the regular season, it's another thing. Sure, when I heard Florentino Perez say, we need Nadal Federer 2 or 3 times a week every week, I wouldn't watch Nadal Federer 2 or 3 times a week every week. I mean, I love it when they face each other. Well, maybe not so much now. They're getting old. But I used to love it, absolutely, when they faced each other in a Grand Slam final after defeating everybody else. It was like a huge matchup. Who's going to win? It happens four times a year in a Grand Slam and like 2 or 3 times in other tournaments. That's exciting. It happens 6 to 7 times a year. But if it happens every single week, you're taking away the event out of it. Because part of the excitement derives from the uniqueness of the event. Otherwise, we get anesthetized. So, yes, you can multiply those meaningful games, but in order to multiply them, we have to raise the stakes. One of the most exciting things in the last Champions League was that they had the quarterfinals were one leg only. So it was basically every game was a final. You couldn't miss it. Now, there were no fans, which kind of made it worse, obviously. But the excitement of having 90 minutes of teams that could not calculate, they could not think, you know, there's no safety net. You got to win. If you win, you make it through. Otherwise, your season's over. That's just damn exciting. It's like all game sevens. And I think they're missing out on that. They think that every game, you just need those teams. It's going to be exciting in the same way. No. If you want to create excitement, you have to have fewer games. If you want to have more games, then they're going to be less exciting. It's just by definition. Because guess what? If I see Real Madrid and Barcelona play every week, I'm going to say, hey, you know what? I can watch them next week. I don't have to watch them now. They play 20 times a year. Well, I'm going to watch the last 3, who are the most meaningful ones. I'm not going to be sad if I miss it. Right now, when there's an El Clasico on TV or when there is a Juventus or Milan Derby, Milan-Inter, I'm going to watch it. But if it's every week, if I miss it, it's not too bad, is it?
And also,
it's absolutely not true that, for example, one of the things they were saying is that young people don't watch it anymore, so they need a bigger event. Well, young people don't watch it for 2 reasons.
Before we get to that, because that's the next question,
sorry.
Anything else you want to say on the having more big games? I think you hit that pretty good, because I think the young people, because I'm very curious to get your take on this. So let me set it up, because I think there is a little, there's more than a little something to this. And I mentioned Hollywood with the Avengers, because I think this is true in anything that has to do with content. Like, there was much more variety of movies, you know, when I was growing up, and now they're like, okay, the ones that make money are these, we need more of these. When I grew up, you know, with Cosmo, I'm a little bit older than you, I grew up, you know, in the 80s, I was what, when, in Italy, you know, we had on, the games were all Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, all the games, so either you went to the stadium or you were following it on the radio. Sometimes you were doing both, you were at the stadium listening on the radio. If you weren't at the game, you were definitely watching Novantesimo Minuto for the highlights, and that's when you first saw the highlights. And look, you know, the world has changed a lot. We talked about it at the top. Like, I remember when, you know, the first time there was kind of the version of Sky where the games were broadcast on TV. There was pay-per-view in Italy. It changed a lot. But then, you know, what happened is then you have streaming, you have Netflix, you have TikTok, you have all these things that are, you know, weren't there before. And the other example that I would raise is, you know, last year when there was no games and then the NBA was like, yeah, we're going to do the bubble, we're going to set it up to finish the season, people were like, oh my God, the ratings in the bubble are going to be huge because we haven't had sports in so long. People are going to be so interested. And then guess what? The ratings at the NBA and the bubble were actually abysmal, like really bad. So do you buy this thing? Because I'm very curious to get your take on this, because I will say this is the one thing that I think they're making is a valid point. Now, is the Super League the solution? Probably not. But I do think between more options, I could see this argument that young people aren't into the game as much as, say, you and I were when we were growing up.
Now, this is actually, I'm going to assume it's true because I've seen, contrasting studies. Some studies come out that younger people don't follow soccer as much. Others say that they still do. But it is true that they are they're less attached as opposed to when I was a small kid or when you were a small kid. There's no question about that. But the reason for me is a much different reason. And it's something that's happening in the U.S. as well. And I know that they've had it in Major League Baseball. And I know that somewhat the ones who have benefited from that were NBA and NFL, who have grown in recent years. And the real reason is not so much with the nature of the game, but it's two things. One, you touched upon, and it's the competitiveness of the youth attention market, let me call it that way.
Yeah.
Because when we were small, well, just let's get a ball and let's go play downstairs in the park, okay, or in the parking lot. Right now, there's no need for that. Guess what? When I was a small kid, actually, one of the things, you know, video games were big, but we had consoles like Nintendo or Sega stuff, right?
Yep.
And if I wanted to play with friends, I would invite them at my house. Right now, with network video gaming, you don't even need to do that. You're always playing with friends anywhere. And you have streaming, you have social networks, and you have all the technology. And so, first of all, everything captures your attention, and you only have so much time during the day. So that's why they're more enticed by highlights. It's also a matter of time management. But this has bit into every sport. It's not something soccer-related. So it's just something that sports have to deal with. It's competition that they did not have in the past. And then there's something that soccer has to deal with, and it's the expensiveness. I mean, how expensive it is to follow soccer these days. I was small, it was, I don't know, watching Napoli, maybe 15,000 liras, which is about €7.50 these days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for €7.50 these days, they don't even sell you a bottle of water, I think. So, at the stadium. So,
yeah.
Well, maybe in Napoli they do. Napoli's a lot cheaper even these days. But if I went to watch a game at the Juventus Stadium, I mean, it's crazy.
It's like going to an arena in the U.S. for sure, Juve Stadium.
Exactly. So the things that make you fall in love, that made us fall in love, you know, the event, going to the stadium. Some people would go with their parents. I wouldn't because my parents don't like soccer, but that's another thing. But some people went with their parents. They built a bond with their father. You know, in the U.S., you would have a catch playing football or baseball with your father and everything. But everything is expensive today. Everything is expensive. So if you want to watch it on TV in Italy, you've got to have Sky for the league, then Sky Calcio. That's the
then DAZN.
The
yeah.
You've got to have Sky Sports for the Champions League. You've got to have DAZN for the other games. And next year, you're going to have Prime Video for the some Champions League games. You used to have Mediaset. I mean, that costs like $200 a month if you want to do things properly without illegal streaming. And then if you want to go to the stadium, that's going to cost even more. People cannot afford it. So if you're not going to make it affordable for people, if you're going to take soccer, free soccer or affordable soccer, away from their eyes, how do you expect to follow it? And what they're saying is instead of lowering the costs and making it more accessible, we're going to basically, in theory, raise the quality of the product. But guess what? If you're going to, I cannot afford a Ferrari right now, okay? And a big disclosure, I cannot afford it. If you raise the quality of the Ferrari and keep the same price of it, I'm still not going to be able to afford it just because it's a better car at the same price. There are some costs that people cannot sustain these days, and you've got to bring them lower. I mean, you've got to make stadiums more affordable and more diverse. You've got to make them more inclusive. But they do not want to do this. They do not want to lower costs to the people, and they do not want to lower the costs of their enterprises. They do not want to lower salaries to their players. They want to keep them high, so which means raising revenues, which means raising costs to the people. But at some point, they're going to run out of it. And if they keep living above the lives they can afford, then what happens is that the bubble is going to break. If it doesn't break right now, it's going to break tomorrow, the day after tomorrow. But the philosophy is the same. The Super League, even if they did it, even for those 15 teams, it would have been just a short-term fix. Because eventually, they would have created more debt. If somebody is in the mindset of living on debt, and you give them more money, they're just going to spend more. And they're going to get in debt again. So it's not going to be something that you fix. You have to do what Domenica said, lower the cost. And guess what? One of the things that also pissed me off, to be honest a bit, I'm going to say this, you know, without shouting, but is that some people, especially Italian journalists, were there was a huge Italian propaganda. I mean, I don't know if you want me to call them out by name, but some journalists, when the Super League came out, they clearly, they were just shilling for the Super League teams, for the three Italian Super League teams. There was one guy in particular who went on four radios and two TVs in the span of 24 hours saying how great the Super League was. But I don't want to get you in trouble. So
I hear
you. Some guys were shilling. And what happened was when the Super League blew up, they were saying, okay, well, then Guardiola and Klopp now should resign. And, Gundogan, for example, or De Bruyne, who complained about it, they should cut their salary. Well, that's not – no, they shouldn't. Absolutely not. They shouldn't. They bear no responsibility. They are employees, and they make what they are offered. If you come to me and you offer me $1 million to work for you, and I take it, then it's not my problem that you are defaulting or failing. If you do not have $1 million, do not offer it to me. If anybody can offer me $1 million, it's because in theory they can afford it, and if they cannot afford it, it's not my problem, it's not my fault. I'm going to make the best offer. And here's the question. Let's say you, David, somebody comes to you, and two companies come to you, A and B, and let's assume all other things equal. One offers you $1 million, and the other offers you $700,000 per year to work for them. You obviously, because of all the other things being equal, you're going to take the guy who offers you $1 million. And then after 3 months, he says, hey, you know what? I made a mistake. I gave you too much. You have to take a pay cut and get only $300,000. You're going to get pissed off, rightly so, because otherwise, if you had known from the start, you would have taken the other offer. But you accepted $1 million under false pretenses. And also, you know what? There's another thing to it. Teams, they obviously love capitalism, and they should, because in a way, that's what makes the modern globalized world go around. But they only like it when they're making money.
Yeah, that's
so when
for
they're
sure.
making money and they have unexpected gains, those unexpected gains belong to the ownership group or to the club. But unexpected losses, oh no, we're going socialism here. We love socialized losses. Okay, so when we have losses, we spread them out to our employees. Our employees have to get pay cuts. So the other question is, okay, but what if next year we have unexpected gains? Are you going to give us unexpected bonuses? Hell no. So how does that work? Why do losses get spread out among employees, among players, among coaches, but gains don't? And if you're paying coaches too much, again, cut the costs. The reason Marotta, for example, was saying, hey, we're going to default without this. Well, the reason he says that is because, not because they're going to default, but because they're going to default if they don't sell Lukaku. They're going to default if they don't sell Eriksen or Brozovic or so on. So what he's really saying is, if you do not help us with money that we do not deserve, we're going to have a worse team. Well, so be it. Then use more competence in building your team. You do not deserve that. So just sell your players off. And guess what? Today, Milan just gave $14 million to a 40-year-old guy who played less than half the games this season. Guess how many he's going to play next season? And then they can't afford to stay on top. Well, guess what? Don't give $14 million to a 40-year-old who can't stay on the pitch anymore. Or give him less. Sure. Well, but that's going to make you weaker. Yes, so what? It's not my problem.
Fair.
Sorry, I'm getting a little fired up here.
No, you are. You are. So let's go to the last point, for the reasons for the creation of the Super League. And also, I'll give you an example. Like today, and I jinxed Atalanta because I was so excited. Because I have to say, it's been very hard for me to watch games. And then I'm like, I watch Atalanta. They were dominating. And I was like, oh, Atalanta's going to finish second. And they're going to finish second above two teams that want to keep them out of the Super League, which I find ironic. And I think despite them getting a draw today, I think that might still happen. And then I got someone tweeting me saying, oh, so the alternative is you're supporting them staying with UEFA and FIFA. These are terrible, institutions. So I guess the argument is, the Super League, there's a lot of flaws, but the alternative is we stay with these institutions that are corrupt and incompetent in some ways. What do you say to that?
Now, that's something. That's why, in part, in theory, originally I was in favor of Super League also, because I wanted to snatch control away from corrupted institutions like UEFA and FIFA. But the clubs just showed that they're even more corrupt. So if you're right now, you're choosing between a rock and a hard place, really. But FIFA and UEFA have shown themselves that while they are corrupt, they are undoubtedly corrupt. They are not as corrupt as Perez, as Agnelli, as these big teams are. So we should have a better system, but I am very skeptical that we can have one with the clubs ruling it. Because the thing is, if they had built up a proper Super League, what they would have done, again, first of all, they would have allowed a possibility for everybody to get promoted or relegated, first of all. Second of all, they would have had reduced risk, but still they would have had risk. Third of all, instead of rewarding the biggest teams with more money, creating a bigger and bigger gap every year as it goes by, they would have put in place the same systems for competitive balance that exists in the United States. It might be salary cap, it might be bigger revenue sharing, it might be, well, they cannot have a draft, so they would have had something else. Maybe they would have reduced transfer fees for any given year for whoever wins the Super League. So let's say you win the Super League, you can only spend $50 million this year. Let's say you arrive 10th, you can spend $200 million. So, you know, every year you have the stronger team that gets a little penalized, because the scope of it is simply balancing out the Super League and creating competitiveness so that anybody can win. Now, if they had done that, that would have been different. But what they are doing is much worse than anything UEFA and FIFA have done. They're taking any sort of merit out of the equation. That cannot be accepted. And again, being against the Super League just means being against the worst of the two evils. Now, again, the Super League is like, again, having one finger that is about to be falling off from your hand and chopping off the whole arm instead of chopping off your finger. Ideally, you would stitch the finger, you would heal the finger, you wouldn't do anything bad. But if you have to give up the finger or the whole arm, you would rather give up the finger. And that's what's happening with UEFA and FIFA. And also, this just shows you how weak their arguments are. If their arguments are about whataboutism, you have no good argument for the Super League. Yeah, what about this other thing? It's not bad. We're talking about the Super League. The Super League is a bad idea that makes things worse. So if the current system doesn't work, let's work to fix it. Let's not trash it and make things worse. Whataboutism is never a solution. And when somebody resorts to whataboutism, it just shows you the weakness of their argument. So that's what happened. And the other thing is elitism. But again, you want to talk about this later, about the Italian, how in Italy we perceive things differently than elsewhere, because our fans from, or our listeners, sorry, I shouldn't call them fans because probably they hate me at this point, but but in, our listeners in the United States or in the UK might not perceive what happened to fans here in Italy. We're going to get into that. You wanted to talk about it, but that's, yeah, that's the whole thing. They failed, and their only argument was about whataboutism and elitism and their God-given right to win and to be the best. That's just not going to stand. Meritocracy still has a place, and I'm glad they lost, and they need to get punished. You've got to see rivers of blood coming out of those teams. But, I'm not biased. I'm just saying that I enjoy these things. I enjoy Game of Thrones, and you know how
it's right there. Great stuff. So this will be the end of part one. This has obviously been available to all of you. We're going to continue this on Patreon. We are going to talk about the sporting culture in Italy versus the UK, which is fascinating. We're going to get into the potential future of the Super League. We are going to get into, you know, the potential conspiracy theory that this was all kind of a ruse to put pressure on UEFA and get some reforms. So if you enjoyed this, I recommend you become a patron. And I don't say that so Napoli Outsider can afford that Ferrari, because I keep costs fixed and his salary is what it is for now. But you'd be helping a great charity and joining a great community. So we're going to continue this on part two.